we will be discussing and practicing breath and all of the different functions of it. So as we inhale, it's very easy to feel ourselves inhaling the air. And what we're going to do is expand that so that we can feel ourselves breathing as something else, which I'll get to. So if everybody just takes a breath in, you can usually feel your diaphragm going down, or if you go to a breathwork class, a very skilled teacher, they'll tell you to focus on the ribs expanding sideways, or even feeling the bottom parts of your ribs expanding. So it's expanding down and out, and sometimes up in the chest. So every time that inhale happens, an awareness of self bringing in the air and expanding with the breath is easy to experience. If we can bring our awareness into our body, then we should be able to bring it beyond our body. So if we bring the awareness into the breath, so as opposed to us breathing the breath, if we imagine the breath is breathing us, so we're actually the air. This brings the concept of self expanded out into the other parts of self. Because what we usually think of as self is skin in. And so the organs within our body, we know, make us up, and we cannot survive without them. But if we realize that there's elements outside of our body that we also cannot exist without, such as the air and what the air carries, like life force and prana and oxygen and nitrogen and carbon, all of the elements that we are taught about in school, but there's other things in the air. If we identify as the air, as opposed to identify as us breathing the air, then we can expand our concept of self. So if we take a breath where we're actually breathing as the air is entering into us, that's the control mechanism. That's the origin of our consciousness. It's a different experience. It's actually an amazing experience. So if we take a few breaths like that, where we're imagining ourselves being breathed by the air, it allows us to identify with the air. And from that component, from that origin perspective, we can start breathing into other people or even other plants or other animals. So if you have a dog or a best friend or a parent or a child, if you're the air, if you're the breath, as you breathe, you can connect and breathe into another. So if you imagine that, breathing into another person, what does that feel like? If you take another few breaths, breathing in to that person, imagine the trees and the grass and the plants and the food plants around you, whether it's your house, your apartment. Feel the air going in and out of those organisms as well. And see if you can actually feel them breathing into you as well. So now you're a collective breath, which is what air is. The air we breathe has gone through many entities, many organisms, many lives. Before it's come into your lungs. And as we know, linear time is but an illusion. It's but a constriction that we have here. It's a limit that we have here. The breath that we breathe now is being breathed by everything that's ever breathed it at any time before and anything that's going to breathe it in the future. It's happening now. Imagine the city that you're in and allow that breath to breathe into everyone, everything in the city that you're in. And the state of being that you're in right now is expanding into the collective. Let's take this concept to the scope, the scale of the planet. As a planet, we are breathing into ourself. Feel the planet breathing in. And into everything else on this planet, including the planet itself. Now, whatever your concept of whatever's beyond this planet, whether it's I'm trying not to make everybody think so much, but whatever's beyond this planet, whether it's a galaxy or a bigger plane of existence or even other dimensions, if we keep on expanding this breath to the scale of larger dimensions, we bring awareness of ourself as multiple. Let's take this in for about 30 more seconds. And you can go ahead and open your eyes when you're ready. So, the flower of life, you guys have probably seen this on the backs of people's cars or in a yoga studio or a healing studio. This shape right here, if you imagine, there's a circle. And then you can see that there's the center, like look at the center circle. There's a circle, and then from the point of the center circle, there's more circles. There's six circles that can touch the point of the center circle. And so what you have is spheres within spheres. Rachel's asking about methylene blue and superxanthin, what it canceled itself out. I'm actually not that well-versed on methylene blue. I've taken it, and I've looked into it. There's too much, it's new. So there's too much contradicting stuff so far, but it seems to be a pretty awesome supplement. But I don't actually have an answer to that question. I've seen the flower, Huxley is saying, I've seen the flower of life as a pattern shown in the air and in everything in reality, connecting everything. Yes. This is why it's one of the most prominent symbols in all of the lands that we know of. Somebody's asking, what is it? I'm talking about the flower of life pattern. So it's spheres within spheres. I'm going to explain how that has to do with the breath that we just did, because in that breath, we were expanding. And if you guys imagine, if you look at this, so this is, how many pages are this? This is from the Flower of Life, volume one and volume two. It's almost 500 pages of books. And then this is The Music of the Divine Spheres, which is written by a Russian physicist who actually knew Drunvalo Melchizedek, who wrote these books. In these books, Drunvalo seems to be connected to Thoth, who is the architect of the pyramids, and or Thoth. But Thoth talks about how all of this is related to human consciousness, and it's all about geometry. But if you look at this, you've got circles within circles. So if you imagine one circle has the perspective of one circle or sphere, okay? But if then you put a bunch of spheres around it, so if you get, now you got a clump of spheres, you have the dimension of that individual sphere. But then you've got also a dimension of the shape that is made of all the spheres clumped together. And if you keep on adding dimensions, you keep on adding, this is a two-dimensional surface, but if you imagine three-dimensionally, the reason why they're all squeezed together, if you guys aren't familiar with the Flower of Life, or you are familiar with the Flower of Life, and you're like, why are all these spheres squeezed together? And the reason for that is there's no emptiness in nature. And I'll come back to that. But when you imagine spheres, and I'm talking about spheres that are clumped together, they don't clump together like perfect geometrical spheres like we draw in geometry class. Because in nature, that's not how it happens. Imagine a soap bubble. They're on its own, it's a sphere. But if you put it next to a soap bubble, they actually merge, they overlap, and then there's what they call the vesica species, but they overlap within each other. I don't know if you guys see the hearts that the screen's making, but they overlap, and then two soap bubbles, they merge together, and there's usually a straight line, but you can imagine it would be an overlap like this. But the point is that the more these spheres get put, the more dimensions. You have the circle, then you have six circles, and then you have more circles, and they start making geometrical shapes, but they're not perfect geometry like in geometry class like we're taught. They're more like squished together. And each pattern, each clump is a different dimension. And it kind of explains consciousness. So if you imagine there's a whole bunch of cells, trillions of cells within ourself, and we are the conscious awareness of the totality of all of those cells. But the individual cells within us also have a perspective point, a point of awareness of consciousness that it's experiencing. But we are the collective awareness of all of those bits. Where you get this from? This is just ancient knowledge. I mean, I just held up three books that have the pictures of the flower of life on them. So this is like 600 pages of where I, you know, just an example of some of where I got this. But, and this is just the books I could grab right now. There's books all over the house. But the point is, and this is said in many different ways, the Law of One teachings, I don't know where those six books are. Ra from the Law of One, which I think is on Audible now, but when I read it, it wasn't on Audible, and it's actually the most bookmarked book I have. And then this guy, anyways, books are my forte. I like them. It's like having a conversation with the author about their life's work. It's like a one-sided conversation where I just listen. So back to us and this clump, this dimension that we're at. So if you imagine in this shape, all of these individual circles are the individual cells of our body, but then the totality of it is us. We're experiencing the awareness of all of the cells. We can go in and feel what our pinky, we can go into the individual circle or clump of circles that is our pinky, and we can meditate on our pinky, and we can start bringing in our awareness through our body. A lot of times it goes to breath. Focus on your breath. And so then you focus on the parts of us that are breathing. We focus on the breath. We watch the breath coming in. We watch the inhales. We watch the holds at the tops of the inhales. We watch the exhales. We watch the way that the body transitions from exhale back to inhale. And the main point is that we are one of these spheres amongst a whole bunch of other spheres around us. And we've been programmed to identify as that sphere, as that cell. We call it self. We've been programmed to identify as that self. It is one of the reasons why we came here to experience that. And we can, with this knowledge, experience other perspectives, a grander self. So when we think about our greater self or higher self, there's many different ways to think about it. It's like our teacher, our guide, our mentor. It can be our wiser self. It can be our self from the future. We can also go into the unification. So we disembody from our self and we unite with the whole, and we can start tuning into the collective wisdom and then realizing that time and space are dimensions of our self. It's time and space. We can maneuver through physical space, but we cannot within this dimension maneuver through time. Time is pretty constricted. We're traveling in one direction. We call it past, present, future, even though it's always present. But we're experiencing it in our minds, and it is like what happened before is past, what's going to happen is future, but it's always present. And time is existing now everywhere. Anything that has happened is happening now. Everything that's going to happen is happening now. From a greater awareness, a different dimension, we have access to that totality, to that unification. Melissa's asking she said, there is no empty. I said, there is no emptiness in nature. Do you mean the way there is no emptiness within the element of air? There are clumps of air in all of the air, something like that, maybe. Yes, I do mean that. I mean that we're constricted by the language that we use. Have you guys realized that? That the language that we use defines, it is what sets the parameter for our experience of life. One of the languages that we use is language, English, Spanish. Another language that we use is math. And a lot of mathematicians are at the point where they feel that math is the language of the universe. And then the geometry people are like, well, wait a minute, math is just the simplified explanation of shape. And every time you simplify for our understanding on this dimension, you take away different aspects of it. And so, for instance, in math, there's a concept called zero. We all know it. We were all taught it. It's actually one of the things that we learn in like first grade. Zero. Well, there's no such thing as zero in nature. There's no expression of this concept in nature. There is no such thing as zero. It is a concept that was invented by man. Whole numbers is another thing that is invented so that we can grasp onto math to make it easier. Whole numbers exist in nature, but they're not necessary. So Pythagoras was obsessed with whole numbers. And a lot of the concepts that we use today could be of that detriment. It could be reduced in accuracy because of the fixation to whole numbers. A lot of the actual important shapes that we're describing, like spirals, are not in whole numbers, right? So like the phi ratio or even pi, which this guy argues is inaccurate. Why am I saying all that? Because there's no space. I was answering Melissa. There's no space in nature, meaning that geometry, as we imagine a cube, it's just perfect straight lines. That's not actually natural. Everything in nature is breathing. There's an inhale and an exhale. So if you look at geometry and you imagine that every line is just the average placement of, like, imagine a guitar string that if you vibrate it, it's, imagine every geometrical shape that you've ever witnessed is not just the shape, even if it's three-dimensionally. It's not just the shape. Every one of those edges are vibrating like a guitar string. So they can convex and concave at every line. And you have this breath that everything is breathing. It's actually really cool if you imagine that. Julie says, I've seen this in the talkings to my masters, found this out on myself. It's the same. Don't feel threatened by the question, please. Oh, the personality is just learned behavior. Self is the unified mind of God that concepts all mind into oneness, is a containment. Can you explain the future present thing a bit more, please? Yes, I will. I love that. Because realizing that time is experienced linearly, but isn't necessarily actually happening linearly, that there's alternative perspectives on that, allows us to open the door to other possibilities, other ways of organizing in our mind what the experience of life is. Wow, there's a lot of comments. Somebody just said, the word that can be spoken is not the eternal word. And that's exactly what I was saying. The universal beingness distilled down into humanness, human language even, that I can speak and you can listen to, is all a distillation. It's all it's refracted into components so that we're just experiencing an aspect of a greater clump of concepts. I work so hard to embody my beliefs and love of humanity. I find it difficult to unembody after all that work just to shift in order to allow the unification. I mean, I would say that if you're working hard to embody love for humanity, the true embodiment is, or the true embodiment of love is being all of humanity. It's expressing as all of humanity. Math isn't easy. Toggling is the key, I wonder. It's a construction of humans to understand the whole universe and everything more. Yes, it's construction. I thought of losing a ring. I lost it this morning during my bike ride. You're going to find out how crazy manifestation is. We oh, this is, I love when Caro manifests things. The things that she manifests are funny to me. Like, we live kind of like in nature. So there's black widows in California, and there's one by her door, and she was kind of not flipping out, but just like being overly excited about the spider. And because that's the program, right? And you can even say that that's genetically programmed. We're genetically programmed to fear these creepy insects because they can cause pain and illness. And so we saw like the biggest one ever, 2 days ago. And then yesterday she was talking about not wanting to go out the front door because of that spider. And she was saying black widow over and over and over, and black widow this, black widow that. And then she goes into the bathroom and I hear her just go, is that a black widow? So she says it again, like as she was saying black widow, she sees one in our house. We've never seen one in our house, but I go into the bathroom and I'm like, there can't be one in the bathroom. And I look down and there it was. I saw the little red hourglass, and I just giggle at stuff like that because there is so much emotional energy and intention invested into black widow, black widow, black widow, that one literally materialized, seemingly random, but perfectly as the height of the emotion was happening. And noticing that as our gift, as our power, makes life a lot more exciting. All right, there is a question I was answering. It was about time. Just reading through some of the other Euclidean geometry, Mr. Intense mentioned. Yes. All right. Time. All right. Ra, in the Law of One teachings, explains densities. And so he explains this concept in terms of densities as opposed to dimensions. Basically, at our level, third density awareness, we have self-awareness. And as we go into another density, like a higher density, meaning we're aware of more selves, we become aware of their emotions, become aware of their thoughts, and then eventually there's no need for us to have individual bodies, and we become disembodied and we're aware of all of the experiences in all of time of all of the selves. And we gain awareness through the evolution of consciousness. And I want to make this clear that this isn't a human that wrote this. This was channeled through a human used as an instrument with three recording devices in case two of them go out of order. Three recording devices while she's essentially in a trance with two engineers watching and recording, and then it just gets transcribed straight to a book. That was from Ra. Ra also is the same Ra that came through in Egypt, what we know of as Egypt. And if you imagine these densities, I just went through like being aware of self, to being aware of others, to being aware of all, to not needing bodies. The same thing happens with time. In these other, especially in the disembodied state of awareness, there's an awareness of all of time. So just like we can travel through physical space, when we disembody, when we release this body and we're in a social memory complex, is the name that Ra gives it, we're in the entire civilization or the entire planetary knowledge of beings within one social memory complex, one organism. And that organism, that being, that social memory complex has an ability to travel through time and space. Like we travel through space, they travel through time. Imagine being able to bring up memories and be in that memory of different organisms in different timelines. At a certain level of totality, you have that ability. Now, what does that mean for us? There's different ways to speak about time. I'm going to present a different way because I've been talking about like everything that's ever happened is happening now. Everything that could happen or that's going to happen is happening later. But then the question is, well, do we have a choice? And I would like to bring up a concept of multiple realities. Right? Like we're in this version that we call reality. Our consciousness is streaming through, we say, time. So if we can come out of the concept that we're in one reality traveling through time, and we imagine that all realities and all times exist now, and we're actually traveling through realities, that gives us the awareness of time. It gives us the illusion of time. It gives us the sensation of time because we're traveling through realities. Imagine each reality is like a movie slide. You know, like the movie is moving, but each frame of the movie, each slide is what I call it, each frame is just an individual snapshot. So imagine every single moment. Bashar says billions of times a second is its own reality. We're going through a slide, a frame of reality, billions of times a second. Now, if that's existing, you can imagine it, all of these different realities physically existing, but even physical existence, we're not able to necessarily prove, right? Everything is just a vibration. So as opposed to thinking about like, there's this book in a different color, in a different reality, think about the potential for this book to exist in all different ways. And what we're experiencing, what our consciousness is experiencing, is pulling up that potential. So I know I'm layering a bunch of different concepts on top of each other, but imagine your computer screen. Your computer screen has an ability to go wherever it desires, wherever you as the controller takes it throughout, let's call it the internet, the interwebs, the information superhighway. For those of you that are 40-ish years old, that was the original name, one of the original names for the World Wide Web, which is what the WWW stands for. I'm sure there's people listening to this that don't know what the WWW stands for, not because they're ignorant, but just because it hasn't been called World Wide Web in a really long time. The computer can go throughout the World Wide Web wherever it desires, and it pulls up onto the screen where the controller steers it. So there's a potential for a lot of different things to happen on the screen, but they only manifest into being if the controller steers the ship in that direction. So if we imagine, somebody said AOL, somebody asked what my sign is, it's Libra, which is why I feel like I'm drawn to learning about different perspectives to balance everything out. So imagine instead of you traveling one reality through time, that you're traveling through realities. And every reality, so I just snapped three times. Each one of those snaps is a different reality. And each one of those reality has a different past, a projected past, and a projected future. Because the past and the future never exist. Those are definitely illusions. Right now, your past doesn't exist here. It's a projection of here. So as we travel through realities, the question is, how do we steer the ship? If we're the controller, how do we steer the ship? How do we steer into different realities where what comes up on the screen is of my will? First of all, I would say that the more power you have to do this relies on your ability to expand yourself out into the universe. It's an awareness that you're greater than just yourself. Because if you're just yourself, it's really easy to fall into victim mindset, like reality's happening to me. But if we're able to expand ourselves out to the universe and realize that we are the universe, we are breathing all of this into existence, that opens up the door. It opens up the opportunity for us to have a means of control. Control is one of those words that I don't really harmonize with, but it is within the constraints of this language that we use. But we're able to embody creatorship. That just takes way too long rather than control, like steer the ship. So the question is, how do we steer the ship into the realities? And the answer that I've come up with is that it comes down to our state of awareness, our state of being. It's a combination of our emotions, our thoughts, and our actions. That is what the components of our state of consciousness is. So we can be happy in the mind, but if we don't feel happy, then we're not there. There's a disruption there. And if we're not acting in a manner that matches that happiness, then we have less power within that framework. Now, the level that we're at in consciousness doesn't matter, but it's the power So if you are angry, right, and you feel angry and you're acting in a competitive, angry dominator status, then you will steer yourself very powerfully to realities that match that. Same thing with joy. If you walk into experiences in your life and you see all of the positives and you're noticing and you're recognizing the negatives, and we can talk about optimism and pessimism and psychological stuff. Like, there's very real evidence-based, science-based studies on the difference between optimistic people and pessimistic people. And I've concluded that optimistic people also see the negative. I can find the studies, but I don't have it on the tip of my brain right now. But pessimistic people only see the negative. They literally discredit the positive, where optimistic people see the positive and the negative. They recognize them both, and they're still happy about it. If you are in your thoughts joyful, in your emotions joyful, and in your actions doing things that harmonize with joy, then you will steer yourself into the realities that harmonize with that. And the paradox of that is that it actually doesn't matter if it's working or not. Like, that's the thing. It doesn't matter if it's working or not, because whatever reality you are in, you are going to experience it at the state of awareness that you're at. I'm just saying that I'll get to that in a second. You are going to experience life at the state of awareness that you're at. And those who are so honed in, and it doesn't matter. It can be at anger. It can be at a level of pride. It can be at a level of apathy. It can be at a level of love, happiness, acceptance, grief, whatever level. If you're completely, totally there in your thoughts, emotions, and actions, you will powerfully experience realities that match that. And once again, it doesn't matter if you believe this or not, it's going to happen. It doesn't matter if what I'm even saying is true or not, because whatever reality comes to you, whether you controlled it or not, you will still experience it at that state of being. That's how you know if something's true, is if you do the opposite of it. If you say, okay, well, what if it's not true? If the message still works, finding out whether it's true or not doesn't even matter. So it's almost like it reveals itself as a paradox. And that's what the universe is. It's all a paradox. Huxley said, another great channeling book is Seth Speaks, The Eternal Validity of the Soul. Yes, I've read about 10-ish Seth books. They're pretty thick, just like the raw things. But Seth is essentially a consciousness that is living multiple human lives. So the thing about Ra is that his civilization came out of Venus. So it's a little bit non-human to listen to, because it's human. I should say non-earthling. It's because human beings, this shape is, it's like a natural evolution, right? Like, look at standing on two legs, eyes above the nose, so that if the nose was above the eyes, if you imagine, like, well, wouldn't there be other shapes? The human being shape, the humanoid, it's also called the five-pointed star, right? Like, this is a point. We got our arms and I'm extending my arms and legs in each direction. You have a five-pointed shape. This shape is rather common in the universe. The mouth, where we take in breath and we take in food, we want this at the bottom of this face, which is at the height, at the top of the two-legged And it's not always two legs and not always two arms. And it's not always in the shape of a mammal. Sometimes it's an insectoid humanoid or like a water-based aquatic humanoid or a reptilian humanoid. But this head that holds our senses at the top with things on the bottom that move us and the organs within us and manipulators, mouth on the bottom so that when you're feeding, this stuff doesn't drop into our nose or the intake mechanism and the eyes. And then this is the intake mechanism of air, which is what we breathe here. This also isn't distracting of the eyes. So you can see that. And then this, which is also receiving out of the way, this shape is, it's rather generic. You can see the usefulness of it and how if an insect were to go through the same evolutionary process, it would be in a similar humanoid shape. But my point is that the humanoids from Venus end up making up what we know of as Ra. And Seth is made up of, he actually has access as an oversoul to human earth, like mammal-based humanoids on Earth. He's living multiple human lifetimes now. And so when he's being channeled through Jane Roberts, who is the channel for the Seth Speaks series, it's more human, it's more usable. But it says the exact same thing. And if you were to read either the Ra books or the Seth books or pretty much any book series, if there's a series of books, I always find that the second book is the most relevant. So if you start with Seth Speaks, definitely read the second Seth books, which I think is called The Nature of Personal Reality, something like that. Because the first book is always just general concepts. And then the second book is usable, applicable information that we can use now here in our life. Same thing with Ra. The first book, The Law of One, the first book is just about the history of the earth. The interviewers are asking about how everything works and the whole history of the earth. The second book is about life. It's about what we do here. And then the third, the fourth, fifth, they get into all the little specifics. There's another book series called The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. Same thing. Book one, pretty general, talking about the magic that these researchers witnessed. A bunch of people went to Asia in between these. It's like a giant super volcano that exploded. And so they're basically like inside of this prehistoric volcano that's very big, like hundreds of miles in every direction. And there's a group, I think there was like 10 or 20 researchers that went there at the very end of the 1800s, like 1870, 1880. And they met up with these masters, and a group of them would be following one master and a group would be following another master. And they were in different groups, but they're all taking notes of time and dates and what were happening. And these masters are like teleporting, and like one group would be writing down, the guy just went on the couch and disappeared. He just disappeared. And then the other group, which is 200 miles away, were like, we're walking through the jungle, and all of a sudden, the same guy that the other group said disappeared appeared like moments later. And they also talk about, which I've seen in three different ways, they also talk about, what are they called? The guys, the Bigfoot. They talk about the Bigfoot beings there. And the point is that that's an exciting book series too, but you got to read the second book if you're going to read any of them. Read the first book and then the second book. You can't just read the second book. All right, y'all. Tomorrow, going live again, Human Garage Channel. If you're watching this live or in my community, Thank you for being here. Thank you for the questions. I'm going to end the video now, and this will probably be recorded and streamed. Leave a comment. Let me know. Ask me more questions. Until then, bye-bye. What are the two books? Seth Speaks was one of them, and Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East was another one I reference. And oh my gosh, I was muted on this one. And The Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And what other one did I mention? Music of the Divine Spears. And I think that's it.